Hello, and welcome to Coffee to Close, where we talk to interesting people with passions and pursuits in and around Brisbane, California, that beautiful yet rowdy, fiercely independent town on the border of San Francisco. Our hope is that you will be inspired and that in the process, we will raise some money for our local nonprofits. Sit back and enjoy. I'm your host, Ron Davis.
Good morning. At least it's a good morning for us. It is 20 minutes after 7 on a beautiful day, right before Labor Day week. I am here with Tom Sewell. Tom offered to interview me, I guess I would say. So I want you to take it away and see where we go with this.
I'm Tom Sewell, and I've been a neighbor here for 17 years, and Ron's been a friend pretty much the whole time. And he's actually a friend, and I didn't even buy my house from him, so that says a lot about a human being right there, I tell you.
It's not a big deal.
I'm psyched on what you're doing, and why don't you just introduce everyone to what this idea you came up with? What is this podcast, and what's the name? Let's just start there.
The name is Coffee to Close, and while we didn't struggle a whole lot to come up with that name, and I didn't really spend a whole lot of time on it, I just felt like one day we were talking, and I said, you know, we have an operation here that's coffee downstairs, which we've melded together, you know, real estate and coffee. And one day I said something about, well, every good close of escrow starts with a great cup of coffee. We opened the Mad House Coffee 16, 17 years ago, right before 9/11. So we're coming up on that. Yeah. It was an interesting time here. We were only open a few days. But so Coffee to Close, we're talking, we're meeting, we're having coffee. And I just thought it was a good time. So many conversations happen around here. I thought there's so many interesting people around Brisbane that it would be nice to just start hearing some people's stories. There's people that affect change with nonprofits. There's people that write books. There's storytellers. There's musicians. There's a lot of really interesting people in the fabric of Brisbane. And I've been blessed to be a part of that and actually have a deeper look into it because of my businesses, both of them, that I meet a lot of people. I know a lot of people around town that nobody knows. So to get those people in here and hear their stories, and, you know, it's just, I thought it would be interesting. So I thought, well, I'm going to make it kind of a fundraiser. So I decided I'm going to donate $100 for every episode that I record and publish, and that I would hope other people would just join in with me and donate to, in name of that, or, you know, local Brisbane nonprofits.
That's very cool, that component in itself. I mean, you're a guy that most people know in town that sells houses, has a coffee shop. I mean, how does this, I mean, you're busy. I see you doing all sorts of stuff. Well, how does a podcast help sell houses, or is that your motivation? I mean, what's the motivation behind it? I mean, this is a lot of work to put these together. And where's that going? You know, why does that interest you?
You know, maybe it's because I started listening to podcasts. I get up, I'm on a phone call at 5 o'clock in the morning with about four. Right now it's up to probably almost 500 people, where we listen to somebody talk for five, seven minutes, just something inspirational. And that's what kicks my day off. Then I go to the gym and listen to podcasts that are either inspirational or training or opening my mind up to new ideas. So I got in the realm of the whole podcasting world, and then I thought, you know, I'm going to try this. I got the equipment here already from having music equipment, and I thought, man, this is something I want to do. I think it would be interesting.
And why don't you plug your favorite podcast? What's your go-to if you want to be, you know, get inspired?
I've been listening to David Allen, Getting Things Done. That system in that book has changed my whole way of doing business, living, structure. That's great. There's another one called The Accidental Creative. That's a really, really, really nice one.
Yeah, you've turned me on to that one. I'm fascinated by that one too.
And the one that you got me listening to was How I Built This. There's another great one. Good stories, good talk about business, about just things, and very inspirational.
How about outside of business? Any kind of funkier podcasts? Anything outside of that?
No, most of it is not even real estate related. I don't even listen to real estate related stuff for the most part. I can't stand really watching those shows on TV, and it's just so far away from our reality most of the time. So most of it's kind of life hacking things, inspirational.
Let's get to know you a little bit, because I, you know, in the pre-interview, I got to learn about how much of a local boy you actually are. I mean, let's go back there. Let's tell us where you grew up and what that was like.
I grew up in San Francisco, born and raised in San Francisco, in the Sunnyside District, right between Monterey Boulevard and City College, and went to local schools, public schools, John O'Connell High School. I got my technical background, went to aircraft maintenance school and welding, which I put both of those to work for some part of my life working on Volkswagens.
Yeah, you got to tell me about this this Volkswagen thing. What was your first entrepreneurial exercise in the garage there?
I would say my first business was a paper route, but my first entrepreneurial venture was working on Volkswagens out of my mom's garage. I was probably 16, 17 years old, and I got one, and I had to learn. You know, I had to learn. We had back then. You had to put together whatever you could put together, right? So I learned how to work on them, and I learned very well. And I turned that into a business, and made quite a bit of money, and ended up flipping Volkswagens for a down payment for a house. And we bought a house at 21 years old. And the only thing we could afford that had a garage in it that we liked was in Brisbane. So that's how we ended up moving to Brisbane.
You know, there's a lot of people right now that are looking at the city, looking at Brisbane. They're kind of in your shoes now, you know. It's too expensive to be in the city.
And I would say the city's probably changed a whole lot more in the last 30 years than Brisbane has.
Yeah.
I mean, even recently I looked and I see the kids walking down the street with the towel around their neck going to the swimming pool. And I look at that, I think, Brisbane's still kind of like San Francisco was in the 60s. Small town, but small town means something. It's not just the size of the town, it's the people.
Yeah, and we just had that block party up on the street. I mean, you don't see a lot of that in the city these days.
Couches in the street. It's great.
Playing drums to all hours. Okay, did you have a name for your company back then, building, working on these V-dubs? And paint me a picture of what that was like. Where was your garage? Was it at, where did you have a garage?
We had a garage right on the corner of Genesee and Flood Street. And my mom and dad were pretty lenient with me, and it was on a corner house, so I had the gate that opened up to the backyard, so I could put three or four cars in the backyard. And I just worked on cars, and I bought them. I had about 40 cars at one time over the time that I was doing that. Maybe 10, 12 at a time. And I'd get the good ones, and I'd get them cheap, and I'd fix them up at every nut and bolt I could. I learned how to fix everything on them, and I just put them back together. I called it Ron's Restoration.
Nice.
And I got a wholesale license, retail sale of sold parts. Used to put stuff in that newspaper back then. I worked on the Volkswagens for a while, and then I hired somebody to help me because I was too busy, and then he worked at an airline, and then I got to work at the airline, which allowed me to go travel all over the world, really, for a while on their dime, and was selling real estate at the same time. Once we got into the second house, I thought, you know, this is something I want to do. So I applied what I learned up to that point and got a real estate license and started selling real estate. And so the 88, 89... right before the earthquake was a hop in time, made some money, decided to tear the house apart. And so I had the house completely, the roof torn off and the whole thing torn up, and about half of it money to do it. And at that time, the economy was tanking, about 1991. So I lost the job at the airline, got laid off. The roof was off and my wife got pregnant. So I was all in the same day.
There you go.
And, so I really had to hustle and work for the next 4 years to get that house finished. I went and worked on it myself. I hung all the sheetrock and the crown molding and hung the doors and did the, you know, the rough electrical. And I mean, I did a lot on my own. Learned, you know, mechanical skills, so I just had to figure it out. I just had to do it and work. You know, before I was working two jobs for both real estate and at the airport for a while, and it was like 12, 14-hour days for probably 4 years. So I just had to hustle.
I always think that self-employment is, you know, a great, great therapy for all your weaknesses, you know? I mean, every day you're tested, you know? Those experiences, you know, are you still applying those today? Are you reorganizing and, you know, trying to prevent the crashes and the... and the highs and the lows.
Well, the crashes come. Yeah. We've you know, and sometimes when you're really successful, you start spending money on things you don't really need. You know, yeah. From a business perspective, systems and tools that you want to try out. Oh, that looks good. So it's like a kind of like a shiny penny syndrome, I guess they call it. You know, yeah. When you chase all these different things. So I've trimmed down quite a bit, and we have systems in place that are really, really good for us or for my agents, and we try to keep a good budget so we can spend the money on what matters, really.
Yeah.
So if we have another crash, you know, we dig in and work harder, but we're not encumbered by a lot of bills, commitments that we don't need.
Can you tie all that experience into today and what you do? Is there any tie-ins for, you know, your day-to-day stuff here?
I think anything you set your mind to and you believe that you can do is possible. I've done a lot of different things along the way, and it comes to back down to, you know, customer service. I don't think I ever advertised as a Volkswagen guy, and I constantly had work, and I never worried about it coming in. It just came in. Of course, Volkswagens broke a lot.
Yeah.
If I was a Toyota mechanic, I don't think I would have been as successful.
Well, they're simple little machines you could pretty much fix with your screwdriver too, but really stubborn.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so you got married at 21. And how important is a good wife to your team? I know she's part of your team now. I mean, and having that great partner. Tell me about your family. And
you got to have support. I always have crazy ideas all the time. You know, let's do this, let's do that. Let's, you know, let's buy another house. Let's tear the roof off and add a second story. You know, let's rent the house out and buy another one. Let's go open a business. You know, let's buy a building. Let's do this, that. And, you know, she tempers that and kind of tamps it down once in a while, but it's a good balance. And she's very creative. She does our staging, and she does a very, very good job of it. It's just, you know, it's great to have her on our team.
So tell me, you get married, you move into Brisbane. What street was that? And when did the bell start going off for you that Brisbane was, you know, unique and special?
It was the second house we looked at. We went in the second house. I walked in the front door. I said, this is it. This is the one I want. And it was sunny, and it was warm, and it was a one-bedroom house. It was small. We could afford it, which I harp on now, that builders that build big complexes and what's getting built now is not affordable because it's not small enough to be affordable. They need to build some studio units and some one-bedrooms in the mix of any large, you know, development, I think.
Yeah, that's a hot topic right now, too. Yeah, same with my wife and I, you know. Two and a one. It started us off, you know,
mm-hmm.
And we haven't left since, you know. Those are going to be really rare.
Yeah, they're becoming rarer and rarer as they get knocked down and people build new houses, which those houses are bought and people want them, but there's still the need for the small house.
So when did that bell go off for you that the people here were different when you moved in to town?
Well, I remember moving in, and then it wasn't too long after I got a knock on the door, and I went out, and there was this older gentleman standing on my front porch with overalls on, and he said, "My name is Woody, and I live right over there, and that's my carport, and in my carport I got a rotor tiller, and I got a this, and I got a that, and I got a this, and I got a that," and I'm thinking, okay, and he goes, "So if you ever need any of those things, you just go over there, and you get them, and you use them, just as long as you put them back, and that you don't break them. If you break them, you fix them, and that's it." So I borrowed his rotor tiller, I did my backyard, and I broke it. And then I went and fixed it. So it was amazing. It was like, wow, where did I land? What is this?
Yeah.
Another thing that happened not too far after that, I think it was Easter right after the next year, you know, that we moved in February. So it was right then, a house caught fire up on the hill. And I woke up in the morning, and I heard this, wah, 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 this big, big, loud noise. I thought the world was ending. I thought it was just incredible siren, loud, blasting horn. And what the heck is that? I woke up, and outside my window was just, like, red, like flames. And I threw open the window, and the house up on the hill was engulfed in flames. And so I'm going to go check this out. I got on my motorcycle. I drove up there, and the firemen were just getting there, and I listened to them. They were all calling each other by name and go behind so-and-so's house, and we need to get over there and over by so-and-so's house. And then all the people from the neighborhood came out. And that was, I think, the first time where I felt like, wow, everybody here knows each other. They're all calling each other by name. They know who lives where. I thought, this is different.
Still that way today, I think.
Yeah, to a large part.
Most definitely. stepping back to family again, your kids grew up here and went to the schools locally? And
yep, Brisbane Elementary and Lippmann, and then they went off to high school in the city. There's a couple options for high school here, but we chose to put them in private school for high school.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's worked out well. Okay, so you got to tell me something about you that maybe most people don't know. What's your passion? How do you escape all this stuff?
Escape it? Well, my wife and I make wine. Been making wine since 2009. That's a nice kind of escape. It's fun.
What do you do with that wine? I mean, is it just do you share it with people?
Or it shows up wherever I show up on whatever, because we have more than we could ever drink. We got, you know, if the world collapses, we got a lot to trade.
That's great.
We got a lot of.
We need that for sure. A lot of bartering going on. That would work well in Brisbane too.
So, but I also like to travel and scuba dive, and do, you know, work with video and photography. It's kind of passions. Scuba diving is good, though. Travel. Early on, I was weighing out something one day about travel. Should I go? Should I spend the money? Should I not? And I talked to an older guy who said, you know, in my life, I've never regretted any money I've spent on travel. And I took that to heart right away. I just thought, okay, I'm not going to regret it. Let's go. And so experiences, to me, are far more valuable than money in the bank.
How many countries have you been to so far?
I think I've been to 24, 25 countries.
Wow.
And I made a goal not too long ago to go to 10 new countries in 10 years, so I wouldn't go back to the same places. And so since that goal, I've gone to the Philippines, China, Belize, St. Martin, different things.
What do you take back from that? You know, when you come here, what do you take back?
You know what's interesting is when I come back here and I look at the traffic does not bother me anymore so much. Of course, I'm right here, so I don't have to get out in it so much. But when motorcycles go through the lanes, it used to bother me, because when I was driving a motorcycle, we never used to do that. We just drive it like a car. We would split lanes. But you spend any time in Istanbul, Tokyo, Manila, Hong Kong, you get the rest of the world. You see things just a little differently. And so it's where we're headed. So maybe I'm just getting older, but I don't get upset about too many things anymore. It's not worth it, for one. You know, it's just the stress of being angry or upset about things you can't really do anything about. It's going to happen. The traffic's just going to get worse, and you got to deal with it. And someday maybe I'll be one of those bicycles scooting through the middle. But you also see people in their own environment. China, the Philippines. And come back here and you see people and you kind of maybe get things that you wouldn't have gotten if you hadn't gone to where they come from.
Yeah.
And their culture, eat their food, listen to their music, hang out on their streets, see their houses, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it's really a good thing to get out of here, to see that the whole world is not like here. You know, there's a difference out there, which is rich.
Thank you. That was actually inspirational for me right now. I mean, I'm like ready to just jump on and book some tickets.
Aren't we going to Nepal next year?
Yeah, we're going to go to Nepal. That'll be interesting. It's kind of a work trip. But let's step into the reality world a little bit. How's Brisbane doing? Where are we set up as far as, you know, the market? Any advice to move here or now that we're living here, maybe moving up and our family's growing? You know, any advice?
Well, you know, I'm glad I made the choice to really stay here and you know, dig in deeper here. I do feel now from other agents in other areas saying they bring people here that they didn't before. So I think the sense is that Brisbane's just going to keep going up because of all the development happening around us, and that people that get closer and see, you know. And for me, I think if they build more and more condos, they build more and more townhouses, that those people that move into those townhouses then see our city and see our single family homes, and they're going to say, you know, that, especially it happens when they have kids, then all of a sudden they want a yard and a, you know, that romantic idea of a house and a yard, a picket fence or whatever, community, you know. Yeah. So we got all that.
It's you know, I've been here, 17 years now, and it just seems to always, it's, you know, we still have that small town feel, and it seems to be getting better. I mean, I'm an optimist. I know you are, but it just seems like that's always going to be intact. Are you optimistic as well?
The small town feel, you say it's getting better.
Yeah.
And you know why it's getting better? because you're meeting more people. You're allowing yourself to get out there and go meet more people. And the more people you meet in a smaller space, pretty soon you see everybody on the street you recognize or know. And that lends itself to that, you know, that small town feeling. And then we have about 1,500 households that could turn over. And there's about anywhere from 60 to 100 households turning over every year. So think about how many people are new in the last 10, 15 years. There's a lot of new people, but that whole small town feeling is not really going away anytime really soon because a lot of those people have gotten involved. Yeah. Even the people at the Ridge have gotten involved. Some people have, you know, we come back and forth and started new things and have added to the town. You know, you can't live on the same, you know, same small group of people and say, this is never going to change. It's going to change. There's other people, but those people got to be interwoven in what works here.
Well, that's what's so cool. I'm starting to see your inspiration for doing the podcast, really. You're connecting people and introducing people that are interesting that, you know, we just walk by every day. And now I'm starting to see, you know, the inspiration here, and that's cool. I know you've interviewed some amazing people. Why don't you tease your audience here on what's coming?
I have a couple of musicians, and I'll say that Ida Funke came in. She's like 17 years old, sang. We recorded her singing and playing the guitar, and it just gives me goosebumps. You know, if you watch American Idol any length of time, you know, you hear, nope. And then somebody sings and you go, oh, wow, that's a gift from God. That's not practice. I mean, yeah, you got to practice what you're given, but that's like a gift. And when you hear that, that's, I think, what makes your hair stand up in the back of your neck or your gives you goosebumps is that because you're hearing something from somewhere else. That's just, that's an amazing, amazing thing. I've been able to spend some time with Nancy Coleman, who's doing the Helping Hands nonprofit, and Camille Salmon, who runs Brisbane Dance Workshop. Had a nice time talking with them. Vanessa Garcia, who owns a 7 Mile House.
Yeah, a lot of people.
That's an episode I'll probably hang on to for a little while. She's writing a book, very interesting things about the 7 Mile House that she's actually uncovered since she's talked to me, so I'll have to have her back on when the book is done.
That's a very special place. And I don't think a lot of people, I didn't know that that's like right on the edge of the border of Brisbane. And you've turned me on to this place. Not only is the food amazing, but the atmosphere there and the music. And I know you get to get on the drum set up there. And it's a very special place. What does that place mean to you?
Well, that's another connecting place. And it's on such the border that, you know, it's everybody from everywhere goes there. And I think most people wouldn't even recognize or know that it's actually in Brisbane. It's, I think, one wall is like right on the border. But that place is great, and I've been able to, yeah, I've played drums. I've played pretty much all my life, and I've found a home there to play quite a bit. I sit in with quite a few people. Usually on Thursday nights I'll be in there, and if I know the band or one of the musicians, I'll get to sit in, which is really, I never ask. I just get offered, and I really appreciate it. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. But now I'm playing with a band that I've but I never really had a lot of time to really commit to that totally. So I'm playing there, I think, once a month in the next couple of months.
Well, I want to thank you and my wife for giving me a hall pass every once in a while on a Thursday to go down there and listen to all that great music and eat that great food. It's a gem. It's a gem that, you know, people may drive by and be scared to walk in, but I encourage everyone to.
Well, now that you put that out there, outdoor patio and everything, it's much more, you know, inviting from the outside. Because people used to tell me that, oh, that place looks kind of scary. You know what? The people in there are great.
Amazing. Amazing. You know, we haven't really talked about the coffee shop. How did that all come together? And I know that you had a partner, and I remember you telling me about a partnership in San Francisco from a coffee shop.
No partner. I leased out a space on 24th and Valencia to Muddy Waters. I worked for the owner who owned the space.
Famous coffee.
And I leased it to a guy named Hisham Masarwe, who's just a gem of a human. Him and his wife are just, Elham and Hisham are wonderful, wonderful people. And that was in 1994. And then he had about four coffee houses in the city on 16th and Church Street and 29th. And he's gotten rid of a couple of them, but I think he still has 16th and 24th. I was selling this building, and the owner came to me and said, you know, you should buy this building. I found another piece of property I really want to buy, and this was in 1999. And I think you really should buy it. You should buy it. You could do this. You could do that. And I'm thinking, what do I want this building for? What am I going to do with this? You know, I sat there, and I thought, well, maybe I could put a coffee house in. So I got him to come over, and he came over, and he goes, oh, I don't know. It's awful slow around here. We stood outside, and, you know, so I made it a point to get up like 5:30, get a cup of coffee and come over here. And I sat in the window for like a week and I checked off how many cars drove by between like 5:30 and 9:30. Oh, and then I thought, well, you know, if I could get a certain percentage of the people that actually drive by, it might work, you know? And he looked at it. And the thing was that when we were standing out on the street, everybody who drove by waved. He goes, but you know everybody around here, so maybe you could make it work if you know enough people around here. And I go, yeah, well, we got daytime population, too, of workers in the industrial park. And so he said, well, what's upstairs? I go, oh, it's just an apartment. And he goes, oh, let me see it. I go, you know, it's just an apartment. So I took him upstairs, and he looked up, and he goes, you know, you should start your own real estate company. You'd be good at it, and it'd be right here, and you can. He walked in the back. He goes, "This could be your office, and this is your reception area." And so he painted this whole picture, and I just said, "Oh man, I don't know. You know, I'm with Coldwell Banker, and I'm in Burlingame." And I thought, you know what? I'm in Burlingame, but most of what I'm doing is in Brisbane, and the people in my office, they don't even want to drive this far to come up here. So at that point, I just started penciling it, and then I couldn't stop thinking about it, and then I just bought it and did it.
And we're happy you did.
It took me a month to get the real estate office set up and incorporated and all my paperwork and everything done. I was already a broker. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, just logo and business cards and all my documents and getting my systems together. And then I hired a great gal, Karen Tam, who was like my first assistant. And that just made it all work. And so it took us 18 months to open the coffee house.
And how long has that been in business, and what's coming? What's coming for the coffee house?
Well, we got to do some remodeling. I haven't raised my prices in about 7 years, so that's going to happen, unfortunately. But we'll still be way under most coffee. And you know, using good coffee, and I got the good, you know, training from somebody who knows what they're doing over these years. And, you know, we've tweaked what we do a little bit. But we opened a few days before 9/11. Huh. And I was downstairs. I would get up and work in the morning with the morning person, and I wanted to make sure everything was going good, and I was having fun with it. And I would work till 9, and then I'd come up to the office and work the rest of the day upstairs. So I was doing both things and just kind of overseeing everything in the beginning. And I got a call from my wife who said, you need to go upstairs and turn on your TV in the office and take a look at what's going on. And I go, what's happening? She goes, just go up there and I'll stay on the phone, just go up. And I think when I got up, I saw the second plane hit. Is about the time when I got up to go look at it. Mm-hmm. And then I heard, you know, everything else that was going on. And it was just really surreal. And we had only been open about 4 days, 5 days. So everything was just new downstairs, and everything was happy, and everybody was coming in all happy, and oh, coffee house and everything. And I looked at that for a little while, and then I came back downstairs and I stood at the register, and a couple of guys came in. I remember them coming in, and I said, have you listened to the news? Do you have a radio on the car? And they said, no, what's up? I go, well, 4 planes got hijacked and 2 crashed into the World Trade Center and 1 crashed in the Pentagon and the other one's unaccounted for. But one of them looked at me and got really mad, and they said, how could you even think that was funny? Why would you even say something like that? I go, because it happened. It's happening right now. And the whole mood of them just dropped. They grabbed their coffee and took off. And I wrestled with it for a day or so to say, do I put a TV in here? Should we all be sitting around watching it unfold? And then I just came to the point where, like, no, you know what? This is the refuge from all of that. This spot. This spot's going to be the refuge from all that nonsense. To come here and hang out and meet people and drink coffee and be the living room of the, you know, this is the living room of the town, not the great room.
Ron, that's just a beautiful way to kind of wrap this up. And thank you. Thank you for doing the podcast. And
well, this is I'm looking at the screen here. This is a longer one than we've done. Most of mine are going to be, I'm going to stick them to about 20 minutes. But yeah. So I think we've covered everything.
We've covered everything, man. And yeah, it's just the perfect way to end, I think.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And we did a podcast, so you're on the list.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I hope I get to edit it before. If not, no worries. Everyone have a great Labor Day weekend, and thanks, Ron.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Coffee to Close. I want to give a special shout out to my son, Chris, who runs the coffee house. He's also going to school and learning real estate, and he's doing a fantastic job at both. I also want to just mention my daughter, Madison. She's doing an excellent job. She got elected to the City Council of Brisbane at 25 years old, and she's just doing a fantastic job there. A lot of doors to knock on, a lot of people to meet and get to know to be able to be elected to public office. So I'm just really super proud of her. And I think it's great. So between all of us and my wife, who stages the houses for us, we got a regular potential for a reality TV show around here. Anyway, we have lots of fun. Brisbane's a great place to live, and we enjoy it. So thanks again for listening. And have a great day.